We're green. That means we're streaming. There we go, Tony.
Hello to Tim's audience. I mean, I'm just calling you from actually a radio studio here in Bristol. It's not snazzy television like you've got over there. We do a radio show every week. It's a politics program every Friday where we drag in a local member of the parliament, have a chat to them or a councillor, and we're then really in the second half of the show, we do the more investigative stuff. Yeah, so we really delve into some of the big issues around the world.
Great. Hold tight, Tony. I was just wanting to do a sound check. I wanted to verify that they were getting the audio from you. Nothing's worse than having a great guest and these people say they can't hear you.
Sure.
But they can hear you, Tony, so let me introduce you. Hey, folks, thank you for tuning into this special edition of Coffee with Tim Black. I wanted to bring you information about Catalonia. I wanted to bring someone who's more specific. They have expertise. They understand the context of what's going on there. And luckily, I was able to be put in connection with this man. His name is Tony Gosling. He's a former BBC reporter. He's an investigative journalist out of the UK. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome my friend and yours, Tony Gosling.
Thank you, Tim.
And we do the claps, and people go, yay. Okay. Tony, my friend, could you please tell people a little bit about yourself, just briefly in a couple minutes or a minute or so, your background and what brings you to this issue?
Okay, well, okay, you want to go right back. Aviation industry, the family business was in the aircraft industry here in Britain, which, as you might have guessed, has now been pretty much destroyed. It's the manufacturing side of it. Used to be big. You know, we used to make all sorts of things, including Concords over here. That's now been completely rolled back, although there's a lot of airplanes around. They're mostly imported. So that was where I started. Did find flying around a bit boring, though. I mean, you know, when you're a youngster, you get excited about, oh, I could fly a plane. That'd be exciting. Once you've flown a few, it's boring. You know, you're sitting there jetting across from one part of the world to the other or one part of Britain to another. So I just thought I need to do something which is going to challenge me day to day and be interesting day to day. So I got into radio in London, community radio, and eventually got a job at the BBC in their main London newsroom for the local BBC station, which was called Greater London Radio. Very exciting year or so spent there doing IRA bomb attacks on London. This is around about 1989, 1990. And so worked in the BBC for 3 or 4 years. That was the start in London. Worked also in Salisbury, which is where the former Prime Minister Ted Heath was living, who's now being accused of being a paedophile, although they're waiting until tomorrow after the end of the Conservative Party conference here in Britain in order to release Operation Conifer's report into the former Tory Prime Minister, who was abusing children. And he was the guy, by the way, that took us into the common market that then became the European Union without anyone actually being asked. And so worked in the BBC for a while. I've helped organise land occupations and squats, this kind of thing, taking over empty property, empty buildings, trying to help house people in London, around the London area, and also here in Bristol. I've been a squatter myself. I got evicted from a place and I just had nowhere to live. So I ended up in a beautiful house, actually, for 2 years, a lovely squat, and paid no rent in there. It was a beautiful, lovely building, brand new central heating system, hot water system, windows. So I'm someone that's been really, I suppose, on all sides of the social justice spectrum. And the other basic thing I believe is that everybody deserves these basic human rights, even though now we're being told we have to pay for everything. And some people just simply don't have any money. They're even in Britain now, if you can believe it, trying to tell people that even if they've got no money at all, they are the ones who've got to pay the big whacks of tax. So if you've got not even a penny, you're still getting these tax bills. And obviously, if you don't pay those tax bills, you're facing fines and even prison. So there's a real attack on poor people. The rich are running the show and they're not paying their tax. And neither are the big corporations. So we're in a bit of a sort of social crisis in Britain. And that's an interesting place to be. I think that's one of the reasons the mismanagement of the economy, mainly by the City of London and by the European Central Bank, that we voted for Brexit last year, which is one of the most, I think, interesting and exciting real bits of politics, having spoken to some of the big movers and shakers at the Bilderberg conference and seen how they react when you tell them about, you even mention the word Brexit, they shiver. They react in a very, you can see the body language. They hate, they're never exposed to the sorts of ideas that are contained in secession movements like that in Catalonia and what we're effectively doing here in Britain, which is seceding from the European Union.
Could you, Tony, I love what you just said. In fact, it reminds me a lot about the U.S., especially when you talk about the homeless situation. I often remark to my audience that we have people in front of buildings that are empty. We have people sleeping on the street in front of perfectly fine buildings that are boarded up, that are closed, that are chained. These people could very easily be occupied out of the elements into these buildings. But I love the fact that you brought up the secession. Could you explain to people a little bit about Catalonia and what the secession means, as if these people have no idea? You know, our news in the U.S. is often runs the lines of the capital of the state narrative. Could you explain a little bit about Catalonia and what secession means and why would they?
Well, I mean, in the U.S., as I understand it, it's probably Texas, which there's been most talk over the years about seceding from federal government. And of course, if you think about the U.S. Civil War, which at Charlottesville, there was a lot of talk about the Civil War. I'm not really a U.S. historian, but one of the things I can tell you is that the Civil War largely was to do with the powers of the federal government. It wasn't just about slavery, but it was about, now, are we going to have a federation of states that are federated together because they want to be, or because the federal government is trying to control them and tax them and force them together? So there's actually a very important element to the American Civil War, which isn't really been talked about very much, and that is that a federation can become a dictatorship very easily because you're focusing power in one place, as has happened in Washington over there, and is now happening in Europe in Brussels. Yes, so the power is being focused in Brussels. And what's happened is, I suppose, that the people who crave power, the people in this world who really don't consider their fellow citizens very much, but they do consider themselves, they seem to be propelled to the top. And that's what's happened in Brussels. I mean, the European Commission, which is Juncker is president of now, these people are all failed politicians. They're people who the voters have voted out, but they somehow find themselves running the European Union. So that's why I think we've got secession in Catalonia, and why, for example, we didn't have in Scotland. Interesting, a couple of years ago, we had the vote in Scotland about seceding from the United Kingdom. The Scottish people said, actually, we think it's quite good to be part of the UK. And that was a free and fair vote. And we've also had votes in other places around the world, like in the Donbass, for example, in the east, the southeast of Ukraine, and in Crimea, where those people also voted to very overwhelmingly to secede from Kiev, from the Ukrainian government, after the coup, the Maidan coup. So I think you've got to look around the world and see where these movements are and why they're happening. The main reason, I think, is very clear. It's a complete mismanagement of the economy in the interests of the super rich. And at the bottom of the ladder, most people are getting really fed up with this. It's effectively a feudal system. A feudal system reasserting itself based on the bankers and their paid politicians. Because in Catalonia and in Spain, it's very clear what's been going on. Is the ruling People's Party, which was President Franco, the fascist dictator's party, who died in 1975, he appointed the King Juan Carlos in 75. He said he wanted him to be his successor. And now we've got Felipe, who's the son of Juan Carlos. So there's a direct succession of the head of state from the fascist general dictator Franco. It's been running Spain. There's a scandal in the same party, the People's Party, which is running Spain as well, is Franco's party. And there's been a scandal going on, started in 2013, rumbling through the Spanish courts. It's called the Gürtel scandal, G-U-R-T-E-L. You can have a look it up on your favorite search engine. Please don't use Google, by the way. Another search engine, anything pretty much. But these guys are censoring a lot of people on YouTube, demonetizing and disappearing important investigative articles from the Google index in the last few months. So I think we need to be boycotting Google if at all possible. But anyway, the Gürtel case is largely to do with the president, Mariano Rajoy. His name is on the documents in this case, as well as Luis Bárcenas, I think that's how you pronounce it, who was the party treasurer. Now, what they were is 22 million euros slush fund in a Swiss bank account paid into their political party in central Spain, in Madrid, by big construction companies who were getting kickbacks or giving kickbacks for construction contracts, for government construction contracts for the last 10, 15 years, possibly even further. But we know 22 million euro slush fund available to, and hundreds of thousands of pounds have been paid from this fund to senior members of the cabinet. So that case has been rumbling through over the last few years. And one of the things that's been happening, most worrying, is that the public prosecutors, that is to say the judges in Spain who've been investigating that specific corruption case, have been being suspended and removed from their position. So that's why we've got a judicial system in Spain which is finding these Orwellian answers like there has been no referendum. You know, there can be no referendum. The vote doesn't matter. This kind of thing. They're getting very corrupt judicial decisions in Spain because the ruling party has been involved in this corruption scandal for the last few years. So I think these are the things that haven't been covered by the mainstream press at all. But it's very important to understand just how corrupt the Spanish government is, because they've been trying to kind of keep it hidden and say, oh, well, there's no problem with the Spanish courts. The courts have ruled in the correct manner. Actually, this is one of the main reasons why I think the Catalans and probably the Basque region, after the Catalans have had their vote too, are going to be seceding from Spain. A very interesting and momentous decision on Sunday, and an appalling display of police violence.
Absolutely.
By the Spanish government, which actually has managed to turn the vote from potentially staying with Spain in the opposite direction. By their arrogance, they have almost sort of shot themselves in the foot.
Wow, what an amazing point you just made, Tony. So the violence that we've seen, because this is what we've been alerted to, is that the video footage of policemen, the state hammering people who are doing nothing but trying to exercise their rights to vote. This is what's grabbed our attention. And you're saying that has what catapulted the vote in the direction of the people. Is these yeah. images.
Well, look, listen, also the press coverage, we have to criticize massively the mainstream press coverage, because they haven't covered all this corruption background. This is stuff that they, if they wanted to, they can sit and look it up on their internet if they wish to, but they've just ignored it almost. I haven't seen any reporting of this corruption trial, which is so key to the understanding the background of why this vote's taking place. And what I would like to also criticize, if I may, my former BBC employers, because they were putting out stories on Sunday saying that the police were clashing with protesters in Barcelona, and they were showing pictures, showing bits of film, police clashing with. No, these are voters. They're not protesters. They were stood in line trying to vote. There was no actual effective protest against the police and some kind of assault on the police going on until Monday evening, when there was the police who were staying in Barcelona in a big hotel were surrounded by ordinary people who were saying, basically, you're staying in the hotel, you're not coming out, to the National Guard police who were staying in Barcelona. So we've got a potential potential here for a civil war, even a reigniting of the Spanish Civil War. I would say much more likely what's going to happen is going to be a constitutional crisis of some sort, because I think that the Catalan separatists in Barcelona have made a very clear decision that, a bit like, in a way, David Davis, who's the negotiator for Brexit for Britain, has made, that we may be dealing with people who actually are not, as the Vladimir Putin calls it when he's dealing with the Pentagon, they're not deal ready, he says. So basically, they're not even interested in a real negotiation. They are effectively trying to dictate the terms of the negotiation. So obviously, if you're trying to negotiate with somebody like that, you're not going to get anywhere. So I think the Catalan parliament are quite ready and prepared for that sort of situation with the Spanish.
Are you, the violence that we've seen from the police to the voters, not the protesters, very important distinction. I'm so glad you mentioned that. So glad you brought that issue to bear. Are they were trying to prevent voters from voting? In America, what we do is we shut down the polling places, for instance. This is what happened in the 2016 primaries specifically. We use other tactics in America that's not so visible. Is that what the occurrence was there in Catalonia? They were stopping them from voting, or is this after they voted? Could you illuminate a little bit on that issue?
Okay, so they had been told to go and seize ballot boxes, to seize ballot papers, and to prevent people voting. So as people were voting, they were being violently attacked and dragged out by the police. Some of them kicked, attacked, you know, with batons. And there was the amazing sight of the Spanish firemen, actually, no, the Basque firemen protecting voters. I mean, so you've got one emergency service stood in between the voters and the national police. So, you know, I think we're seeing some very interesting things going on in the European Union. And it's really important to look at who has been supporting Rajoy and the fascistic, I wouldn't necessarily say fascist, because they were democratically elected. They're behaving like fascists. Is President Trump. Trump weighed in on the side of Rajoy, saying that the vote was illegal. Also, President Macron in France, he weighed in. And by the way, he is a kind of confected, manufactured president who is very much part of the internationalists, the Bilderberg conferences, these kinds of people. He's been to the Bilderberg conference. He's a former Goldman Sachs person, he's an ex-banker, etc. So he's a kind of one of the internationalist elite. So it's not surprising that he has been supporting. But also, it's interesting to see Donald Tusk also weighing in on the side of the Spanish government. Now, that has actually had a big effect across Europe. Many of the radicals who have previously, for example, been Remainers against Brexit and have been supporting the Brussels and the European Union here in Britain have seen this and actually been utterly repelled by it. Listen, there are something like five or six clauses of the European Declaration of Human Rights that have been broken by the Spanish government. And yet the president of the European Union has been supporting him. So this is quite a clear message to many people around the continent, you know, whatever it is, 500 to 800 million of us, that the European Union is on the side of the big bad guys. He's certainly not supporting human rights.
This is so, this reminds me so much of the U.S., what we deal with, and it's just so great to get an international perspective that we are not, that this is not a uniquely American thing, but this is occurring in other countries across the world, including what happened in Britain, what's going on now in Catalonia. I'm just dumbfounded, brother. I'm very new to this information. That's why it was so important that you reached out, that you provided us some time to give us context for this. So the corruption that you explained earlier, that is what has led these people to want to secede from Spain. And these people.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you've got in Spain, in many other countries, is a federation. Effectively, I mean, we've got it here in Britain. We've got a Scottish Parliament. We've got a Welsh Parliament. And we've got a Westminster Parliament, but they are all part of the United Kingdom because they wish to stay like that. That effectively is what's supposed to be happening in the United States. I would encourage people in the US to test what do each individual state's population think about the federal government. Do they wish to remain with the federal government, or would they rather pay their taxes to and be ruled by their state legislature, by their state? Well, I mean, you don't have state parliaments, right? But would you like to be just a state, or would you actually prefer to be ruled from Washington? So it would be interesting to see what would happen. I mean, we're talking about now in Austria and in Italy, two secession votes coming on the horizon. One is the Tyrol in Austria. Potentially that may happen in the next couple of years. And in Venice in Italy, there is also a very strong secession movement there, because it was Garibaldi back hundreds of years ago that forced the various city-states and regions of Italy together into one state. And the Venetians, well, they're very wealthy. They think, well, we're paying loads of money into the Rome government, but hang on a minute, most of that money's going in debt repayments, so we hardly see any of it back. So it's not surprising that some of the rich and powerful, wealthy people and ordinary people in Venice are thinking, well, what's the point of being part of Italy anymore?
You know, could you speak a little bit about the economic factors that have also spearheaded this movement? My understanding is that there is a high unemployment rate, particularly of those people 25 years and younger in this country, and that's part of the angst, the desperation of the people to succeed away from Spain.
Yeah, the figures are around about 25% of Spanish of working age are unemployed. Now, they keep saying, oh, there's more and more people who are getting work. Well, but there's also more and more people who are falling into poverty. That's just literally this year. And homelessness is increasing in Spain. So the figures are supposed to say that things are getting better. And that's what you'll hear from the official Spanish government. But on the ground, poverty is increasing, homelessness is increasing. So obviously, the figures are being fixed. Let's just say it like it is. The government is fixing the figures like it is here in Britain, just to make it look as if things are getting better because they're so desperate. They have lost control of the economy and then they're incompetent. They're managing it incompetently, just like your government is. You know, you had in the United States an increasing standard of living right up until the mid-1970s, late 1970s with President Nixon. Over here, it's a similar sort of thing, actually. It was more the 1980s here when the standards of living started to fall. But all the time, what you're getting is positive, positive, positive words. The actual result is very negative. So the 18 to 25-year-olds is even worse in Spain. It's a 50% unemployment rate. We've got lots of Spanish here in Bristol who have just given up trying to get a job in Spain. So they've come over here maybe to work in a restaurant, a bar or whatever. And we've actually got quite a nice, friendly Spanish expat community here. And that's one of the things that's happened in the European Union because it's been so easy to move around. And that's one of the positive things about it, I think, is that you've got kind of little expat communities like used to happen in the old days. Like, for example, in Moscow, there was a kind of British community in Moscow, even in the early part of the last century, you know, right up until even through the Soviet era. You know, you've got English speaking people kind of getting together in the middle of Moscow in the English Club. Beautiful old place it was until it was closed down. But, you know, this is what's been happening, I think, right across Europe. And that's, I think, a positive thing. The negative side of it all is that it's meant that there's more British unemployed because a lot of these foreign people are coming in, taking jobs, prepared to take very, very low wages. And the unions have fought for many years in Britain to keep wages up. And they're now finding they're undermined by cheap imported labour. Now, that is not to blame those individuals. What we're blaming really is the big corporations who want to take cheap labour. And also, very important fact is I've got some bad news, right? Capitalism died in 2008. Capitalism is dead, right? When the bailouts of the banks took place, that was the end for capitalism. All we've been doing ever since is propping it up with funny money printed out of nowhere from the central banks. It's called quantitative easing. And this is just used to prop up the stock markets, prop up the property prices, and it never filters its way, finds its way into the real economy. And until we deal with that situation, the only way out of it, I think, in the future is a real crash, because 2008 wasn't a crash. It was a massive bailout where the public and the governments bailed out these useless banks, fraudulent banks, were propped up. They should have been allowed to collapse. The people who had their money invested in them would have lost their cash. So that is the big investors. There are protection schemes for people with less than about £50,000 in the bank, protection schemes. Also, the shareholders of the banks would have lost their money, but that couldn't be allowed because they were the rich and the super rich. That should have been allowed to happen. And I think capitalism is now on life support system, a kind of heroin being pumped in every few months to try and keep it alive. But look, I mean, anyone that tries to pretend that the economy is going to recover, forget it. The system is the financial system is dead as a dodo. It's just being kept alive artificial life support.
You know, it sounds a lot like what they do here in the U.S. If you complain about the influx of people coming in to take jobs at a lower wage, they prop up the idea that you're racist or you're a bigoted or you're Islamophobic or against Mexicans. But really, there's an economic component to this that has nothing to do with race. It has to do with these people being displaced. It's just amazing how this is not just an American narrative, but an international narrative. What's going on in Britain? What's going on in Spain is very similar to what's going on in the U.S. and how the media frames it and how they articulate it. They spin it and they paint these people as bad guys. And I love the point that you pointed out. It's not that these people are bad, that this is the reality to their lives and how it impacts them. Anything else, Tony?
Well, look, I think, Wes, the European Union and the United States is one big empire, really. I see it as kind of good cop, bad cop. The American Pentagon goes around and kind of kicks, maybe goes into Iraq. I mean, obviously Britain went in there too, but there was a lot of reluctance from other European countries. And then Angela Merkel will come along and say, look, let's just do a nice financial deal. We'll be nice to you. You know, the good cop, bad cop approach. Remember, we're talking about something like nearly a billion people altogether across those two, you know, North America and Europe. But we are very, very wedded together, I think, financially. So if Wall Street was to collapse or the City of London would collapse, the whole lot would go down. We talk about it as a euro-dollar crisis. I think that's what would happen. And you'd find the cash points just sort of freezing up. You would also find that money would just completely disappear. So in other words, that governments would take our money, as they did in Cyprus, in order to pay off their debts, this kind of thing. So money that's been saved for many, many years, suddenly it's gone at the flick of a switch. And they've used the 2008 bailout to bounce Gordon Brown and the rest of those leaders back in those days into this kind of new system where the economy is on this life support system. The thing is, how long can it stay on life support? That's the big question. Also, look, another thing about Catalonia, I think it's important to point out that the timing of the Las Vegas shooting was, I would say, a little bit suspicious on the night of that Catalonia vote, because it was a momentous historic vote they took, the first European secession vote really to be away from a major country. That is to say, it's like if Scotland had voted to secede from Britain. So that vote is very important. And also the police violence, very important. The appalling attitude of the Spanish government, very important. Then suddenly this shooting attack in Las Vegas completely knocks it off of the news. And I think mainly it's the big news agendas around the world which are kind of used these days to steer public opinion. And if there's something that the I don't know, we could call them the New World Order, the elite, whoever they are, these are the people behind the scenes that manipulate events, the bankers mainly. Often the big media companies too are in bed with these people. At places like the Bilderberg, they certainly are in bed with them. And people like Henry Kissinger, the bankers, the arms business, arms companies as well. So what they are doing, I think, effectively is trying to steer events from behind the scenes. So that's one of the reasons I look at things like the Las Vegas event. I think, is that really timed? Because of all the evidence I've seen, there is an hour and 3 minutes between the end of the shootings in Las Vegas, the machine gun shootings, and the SWAT team entering this guy's room. The police have been very cagey in Las Vegas about giving timings, but if you go and have a look at the timings, that's what appears to be the case. So what was this guy doing for that hour and 3 minutes between the end of the shootings and the police? And it looks as if there may have been other people in that room who just simply left this guy's body there, executed him, left his body there for the police to find. And the police obviously thinking, oh, it must be him that did it. It may be that they were dressed as private security. There were private security guards chasing some other private security guard, someone who's dressed as a private security guard. I've seen in an Australian newspaper, some Australian guests who were in one of the hotels. So I don't think it's necessary that the guy that they've said did it really did it. And I think we really need to interrogate and ask questions. It may even be that the FBI know more than they're saying, because they're not saying very much about Las Vegas. And so I'm sorry to go into that as well. But I think we need to look at the way that sometimes one big event, a big terrorist event of one sort, can completely blot out proper news coverage of another, like Catalonia.
Tony, you just blew my mind, sir. I'm just going to tell you, you just blew my mind. I've been hearing people, no one has articulated it, the connectivity of these issues with international crises, what's going on in the rest of the world, and how this may be a part of a grander scheme, so to speak. Tony, is there anything else, man? You're just dropping so many jewels here. Is there anything else that you've left out? I want to shut up and give you that opportunity to express it.
Yeah, I would suggest that people look at this Gürtel scandal in Spain. I also think we need to really interrogate the FBI on this. As various people have been complaining that their videos about the Las Vegas attack have been taken down from YouTube. So I think this is really important. And along with the demonetization, for example, as a friend of mine, or I say he's a friend of mine, someone I've interviewed, but I've got to know him, so I've done several interviews with him now, a guy called Michael Tyler. He lives on a canal boat in Northampton, and michaeltyler.co.uk is his website. And he has done an amazing job, which is to compile a list of 80 bankers who have been found dead over the last 3 years, and look at each one individually and put links to the articles about them. Most of those bankers are from JP Morgan, from Deutsche Bank, and also from UBS, the Swiss, big Swiss bank UBS. We heard about them earlier, remember? The Swiss bankers running a slush fund for the Spanish fascistic, let's be precise here, fascistic government. And so I think those sorts of pages that Google has been delisting, in other words, some of Michael's pages and some of his images have been completely wiped out since the April algorithm was introduced by Google, that we need to be really vigilant in pressing Google. Look, you have brought people in on this new platform. You have been actually helping people to make a living by doing what the mainstream media isn't. Don't demonetize them. Don't demonetize them. And never, ever remove pages from your index of investigative journalists. This is an appalling sort of behavior, which actually puts Google side by side with the war machine. And we're not allowing that to take place without a lot of screaming and shouting and I think, you know, destroying Google's brand as a result if they carry on like this.
You know, I'm working with another independent reporter. His name is Lee Camp. He's a comedian. He also does progressive, more balanced reporting. And we were starting a boycott of Google search. And this is just something that he just prompted me with just yesterday. So we're definitely on board with you on this, Tony. I totally agree with you. Tony, where do people go to get more information and follow you to find out more about your reporting and the investigative work you do?
Okay, well, there are several websites. One of the places we've been discussing Las Vegas and Catalonia is I run something called the UK 9/11 Forum, which has been going really ever since about 2003, 2004. All sorts of terrorist incidents, we do that. It's the numbers 911forum.org.uk. So people can have a look at there if they like what they see. It takes a couple of days to register, so just register. Wait till your registration comes along. If it doesn't, you know, send me an email, say, hey, Tony, what's going on? That then you'll find lots and lots on there from all the subjects we've been covering. We even do a section of that called the great financial 9/11. That is to say, the conspiracy in the financial sector, because everybody knows now that Building 7, the lack of appearance of the Air Force on 9/11, there's all sorts of things that point towards that being a massive big bamboozle. And so that's one site. I also do something called Bilderberg.org, which I got the domain name. I got the money for that when I was penniless back in 1996 from one of Henry Kissinger's goddaughters to buy that domain. And so that's got all the background knowledge you'll ever need to know about the formation of the Bilderberg conferences. And of course, that and the European movement and the original common market was largely put together by CIA money. That's been absolutely proven now. So it was US intelligence money, because Henry Kissinger was saying in the 70s, for example, he was saying, look, why do I have to phone up these 32 different embassies? I want one number to phone. And so that's one of the reasons they've started to try and bring all these countries together in this European Federation, which has now become a political, but it's not even democratic. The commission which runs the European Union are all, as I said, failed politicians. Finally, you can find my weekly radio program, which I do here in Bristol. And by the way, we discovered America. Did you know that? Bristol? We sent out a guy called John Cabot back in 1497, who sailed up to Newfoundland and did the first reconnaissance for genocide, we call it. Some of us here in Bristol is where the up to 100 million Native Americans in North and South America were slaughtered by the European powers. You know, so this is an appalling crime. And I'm afraid to say there's very little here in Bristol that really documents that, and the slave trade, which was carried out from Bristol. So we are a bit of a guilty party when it comes to the Native American genocide, I'm afraid. But it's a beautiful city still. It's a very cultural city, a lot of music here, that sort of thing. And we love it. You know, a lot of people come here from all sorts of parts of Europe and parts of the world because we feel it's quite a vibrant kind of cultural atmosphere. It's also a great place to go out in the evenings. It's getting a bit cold now. But you'll find my website that I do the politics program here in the city on the community radio station. You'll find that at thisweek.org.uk. And there's a whole archive of stuff there. But we try and do everything that needs to be done. In a way, I see my mission in a way if you could call me a missionary, is to do the stuff the mainstream media leave out. So I sometimes get people, why don't you cover this? Why don't you cover that? And I say, well, look, the mainstream's covering it. So we do the stuff they don't. And that's the sort of same sort of thing you're doing.
I try my best, Tony. You're such an inspiration. I love your point of view. Thank you so much for spending time. I know you got another interview following this one. I appreciate you so much. Tony Gosling, ladies and gentlemen, please follow him. I will be posting this on multiple platforms, Tony. Hopefully we can keep the conversation going, and I'll be continue to retweet you on Twitter. Thank you, sir.
Yes, and you can find me on Twitter, too. Just Tony Gosling. Simple.
Tony. That's it, guys. Thank you, guys, for tuning in. All right, guys, that's it. I want to thank you so much. This was Spur of the Moment. Tony Gosling came in and he just rocked the world. He just rocked our airwaves. Such a great opportunity to have him on the show. Thank you so much for everyone who retweeted it. Shout out to Carmen Stefiago, my friend Steph, all the others who shared this, as well as Julian Assange. I think Julian Assange was in a thread with Tony. And all I can say is this is amazing. Thank you, Momo Pineno, and all the people of Catalonia. You understand the background in that. We have context for it. Shout out to Lee Camp and also the hashtag boycott Google search. We're going to start that real soon. Look for a video from Lee Camp and a video from myself and all others that were able to get on board in this movement to uncensor the censoring on Google search. I'm Tim Black. I'm out, and I'll see you guys on the next one. Stay in the fight. I'll see you soon. Peace. Thank you, Tony.
Tim Black. Yes, I am. True. Funny. Tim Black. I am TimBlack.com. Tim Black.